Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Joan Pride is our guest. Joan is senior editor with the Kipling Editors and a longtime member of our Brain Trust and a longtime friend of ours. She joins us now to talk to us about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world. Joan, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Jim. Good morning.
It's good to have you back, as always. Did you know that on this day in 1987, Mary Hart insured her legs for $2 million with Lloyd's of London?
And you said that wasn't enough, huh?
Well, what do you think? I mean, I've seen those
legs. Hey, I'm not getting into that one. You're going to have to be the expert there. I'm sorry.
I think those were $3 million legs if they were worth a penny. Joan, is anybody in? Now you're there. You're inside the Beltway in our nation.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah.
Only to work, not to live.
It's like a dream come true, isn't it?
Joan, is
anybody talking about anything besides
John
Roberts? By the way,
and I don't mean the movie.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but Joan, am I the only one who thought he'd nominated a CBS correspondent when they heard that name?
Well, here's the real irony. I was flipping the dial the other night. I guess was it last night or the night before? And I got to CBS and John Roberts on CBS.
Right.
Sort of wryly announced that the nominee was John Roberts. So how eerie is that?
Did he have a little fun with it at all?
Not really. There was a little smile. But
well,
if I was him, I would have said I was
CBS,
nominated myself.
You know, CBS needs to loosen up,
lighten up a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe he didn't. I mean,
that could have been a lot of fun.
He could have gotten a month of material out of that.
That's right.
I mean, he should call me. I could write some stuff for him. But anyway, John Roberts is it J. Roberts? I forgot. No, John G. I guess it is. Junior, the nominee. Is anybody talking about anything else?
I'm just checking his name here. John G. Roberts Jr. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely not.
Well, yeah.
I don't really think there's much to talk about. I would think he's going to be easily confirmed.
Well, there will be some discussion, and I'm sure that as the summer goes on, we'll have plenty more to talk about, you and I, about this. But I have covered this earlier in the week with actually yesterday, I guess it was, with a couple of our political experts, and it seems that everybody believes that he will be confirmed, but not without the Democrats getting their pound of flesh. Right.
Well, I guess I don't. I'm not sure how they do it, but we'll find out.
Don't be naive, Joan. Of course they will. Joan, let's talk about the war on terror. How are we doing?
Well, we're saying that we're going to take a new tack on it, and the U.S. is going to have to revamp its priorities, and because there's a bunch of gaps that need to be filled. Although we are saying, even though the timing of this lead is set to connect with the London bombings, we're saying that this has been in the works for a long time and it isn't a direct result of the bombings.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And in fact, I remember hearing Mr. Chertoff some, you know, a few little things here and there that he'd been working on prior to the London bombings. And because I think we all realize the task. I mean, I think anybody who stops for a moment, Joan, and thinks about it, let alone these professionals like Chertoff and the other folks at the Homeland Security Agency, we all realize what a daunting task, maybe a virtually impossible task, it is to protect ourselves from terrorists in this open country that we have.
Well, it's kind of the ultimate needle in a haystack. To actually, and if you think about here, for example, in Washington, D.C., our metro system, how do you protect that? How do you protect the New York City subway system? It sort of boggles the mind.
Right. And you think about the borders that we have. I mean, we got thousands of miles of borders. What do we got? Probably, would you say 8,000 miles of borders counting Canada and Mexico? I would think probably at least 8,000, wouldn't we?
Boy, think about that.
From tip to tip.
Yeah, right.
And in the north, and then all along the southwest there on the south, you know, Texas and Arizona and California, et cetera. So it does boggle the mind. But you know, Joan, one thing that probably is a little bit of a new wrinkle, maybe not a brand new wrinkle, but maybe new renewed emphasis as a result of the London bombings, is the homegrown aspect.
Right.
Three of the four terrorists, I'm going to call them terrorists, even if Canada and the BBC refuse to. the three of the four terrorists, the murderers, were actually born in and were British citizens, weren't they?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
And, of course, we've already had that to happen here, haven't we? We already have some people in the United States who are American citizens who have aligned themselves with the terrorists.
Yes.
You guys actually had one right there who was from the D.C. area. What was his name?
The man who went on trial in Alexandria. Oh, gosh. John.
I've forgotten his name. But anyway, that young man and whom you and I have a mutual friend who actually knew him as a kid.
We do?
Yeah, we do. And I'll tell you about that later. But the thing is that that I would think that would be another thing that Mr. Chertoff has since then. I'm not saying that they hadn't thought about it before, but they would now be saying, okay, you know, we've got to realize that these people might not be coming across the borders. They might already have been here all their lives.
Right. And you're right. I'm sure they've already thought of that.
But you got to believe that they're redoubling their efforts and comparing notes.
Right.
Comparing notes with what the English have learned in the last
exactly.
month,
right.
A couple of 3 weeks, I would think.
Right. Right. But
you guys point out that he's working on some clear priorities, improving intelligence. Making sure John Negroponte, the U.S. chief intelligence chief, I should say, he's working really hard, according to Kiplinger, on cutting down some of the turf battles that the
and I think that's where you saw a lot of the disconnects and the problems, because you have intelligence in the Pentagon and the CIA and elsewhere, and it
FBI.
Just wasn't being coordinated, and
right.
the FBI, right?
Mm-hmm. And all the, and every you know every law enforcement agency is collecting either actively or passively intelligence. They're
sure.
getting some information, and that's one of the big dividends that we got from the Patriot Act, wasn't it, Joan? It broke those walls down, didn't it?
That's correct, and that's really what they needed to improve intelligence.
There actually, folks, if you didn't know this or if you've forgotten, there actually had been barriers, walls built between the different agencies. They actually were prohibited by law prior to the Patriot Act from sharing intelligence information. How dumb was that? We're not doing that anymore. We're getting better. 20 after. Stay with us.
A sugar and spice. I feel nice.
Fleetwood Mac, ladies and gentlemen, one of the great bands. 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about the first page one of the Kiplinger letter for this week, and that the feature story is all about Homeland Security. And Joan, one of the things that you guys report is that there will be more emphasis put on chemical, nuclear, and biological strikes, the real catastrophic events.
That's right. That's a good point.
What's he going to do there?
Well, in terms of catastrophic events, Chertoff wants technology that can detect those kinds of weapons. And he also has a new position there. It's called Chief Medical Officer.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea would be to try to better cope with any kind of situation that would cause mass casualties by having a national strategy for it.
You know, the people that I talk to about this say without even blinking that it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Matter of when, yeah.
Something like this is going to happen to us.
I know.
And that's a real sobering reality, sobering belief to have for the for you know, we all go about our business and we expect it to happen not to us, to somebody else. But you got a guy like Chertoff and Negroponte and the other folks at the and the folks at the Homeland Security Agency. You know, it may not happen to them, but if it happens, it happens to them.
I mean,
that's a heavy burden to wake up with every morning, isn't it, Joan? I would think.
Oh, no question.
Yeah. Border security, we talked about that earlier. Oh, by the way, I want to come back to this technology. Look to small businesses, Joan, and the ability to detect these weapons. Look to small businesses. I bet when these things are developed, I bet you the majority, maybe not all, but the majority of the technology that will be developed, and if not the finished product, the components of those products will be created, will be developed by a small business.
That's interesting.
Well, one of the reasons why I say that is I actually know some of these people.
Oh.
I've actually interviewed on this show some of the small businesses that are creating security types of products and technology. And they're, you know, they're either are talking with the government or they're already doing business with the government.
Right.
This is going on all over the country. And so you, all of you folks out there, all of you small business owners, especially you, all those of you who are into working on innovations and inventions, keep on working. We're proud of you. Joan, border security, we talked about that a minute ago, the thousands of miles. They want to beef that up and help the Border Patrol folks, don't they?
That's right. And I mean, this is the part that I just don't. To me, it's the hardest thing to get your arms around when you think of the vastness of our border.
Mm-hmm.
And the
porousness of it.
Yeah, and now it says here, Chertoff wants to fingerprint every first-time visitor.
I'm imagining them at the Rio Grande, Joan. I got to have a little fun with this, folks. I'm imagining them at the Rio Grande, Joan. And here come the folks across the river, you know, illegally. And so the border guys stop them, and they say, and the people think, well, you know, I'm caught. And the guy says, oh no, we just need to fingerprint you, and you can go on your way.
Why didn't you catch him? Well, that wasn't my job.
You told me to fingerprint him.
Right. Yeah. What do you want from me?
Yeah, dry your finger off there, and let's get you a fingerprint. But anyway, this is a big deal. I guess first time visitor, they mean people who are coming in legally. Now that's an interesting thing, Joan, because you've traveled internationally. I have. I've never been asked to have my fingerprinted.
Well, that's true. I never have either.
I've been looked at awfully sternly by the folks.
And can you blame them?
No, absolutely, no question about it. I tell you what, if you go to a third world country, now that's an interesting event to go through the through the customs process in a third world country where there actually are guys standing around with machine guns.
Ooh.
Now you talk about getting some looks from the guy behind the cage in the customs thing. They'll look at you, and if you've got any guilt in your from anything in your history, it'll all be on your face at that when they look at you. Port security. This is another one that a lot of people are worried about, isn't it, Joan? All of the things that we have coming in from all over the world could have some kind of a dangerous item planted in it, couldn't it?
Well, this is interesting, though, because it says that there is technology that can spot problems, and Chertoff wants to implement that technology. That sounds to me like a no-brainer.
Should have already done it, but, of course, it costs money. And we, you know, Joan, again, this is another example, though, of how much are we willing to pay for this?
Right.
You know, we could make airlines completely safe where no one would ever die in a plane crash, basically, if we were willing to spend that kind of money. We could make cars so safe that if you had a wreck, you wouldn't die. But nobody would buy them.
Because they're too expensive?
Yeah. You know, that's another thing. Isn't that something? I mean, that's kind of a fatalistic attitude maybe, but don't we also, as citizens, need to realize that? You know, what are we willing to give up? How much are we willing to pay?
That's right.
And this also gets to the liberty issue, doesn't it? How much of our liberties are we willing to give up?
Well, and that's been kind of the tension there.
Right. And that's what I want to come back to when we come back after these messages. And then we're going to move on. We got more things like the IRS, folks. Small business owners, the IRS is up to stuff, and we need to tell you about that when we come back after these messages. 29 after I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third straight year.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blassingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Mr. Wonderful, at your service. That's what Joan Pride calls me all the time. Right, Joan?
All the time.
Yeah, Mr. Wonderful this, Mr. Wonderful that. It's so nice to hear. It's so nice to hear Joan. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. Joan, we're talking about Homeland Security and some of the things that Mr. Chertoff is doing to the Department of Homeland Security head there. Is it Michael Chertoff? Is that his first
name?
Michael Chertoff. And we're talking about some of the things that he's got working. And mass transit. Joan, you're a consumer of mass transit there in our nation's capital, aren't you?
I certainly am every day to go to work.
You use it, and do you think much about terrorism when you get on the M?
And I couldn't tell you why. I really couldn't tell you why. I guess it's just I'm in denial, because if I wasn't, you know, if we weren't in denial to a certain extent, we'd all be paralyzed and couldn't go to work.
Well,
on the other hand, you can't help but you can't really avoid it, because they are now bombarding us with messages, both digital and audio, in the system, warning us or alerting us and asking us to sort of be part of this and watch for unattended bags or anybody looking suspicious.
Right. So when they do that, no one looks at you and says anything?
No? See, this is why everybody's what I mean about everybody being in denial. But I do think that all those messages, even though you kind of tend to tune them out, I think if I did see something weird, I would be motivated to go to the station attendant and say something.
Right. Well, this is another example of terrorism when we have to have those messages.
Right.
And, you know, this is
excuse me, I have to get on my soapbox. They took away all the trash cans.
Yeah, you tell me about
that.
They did
this after 9/11, and my life has never been the same.
Right.
You can't throw anything out anywhere in the system. And I'm surprised that the system isn't more full of litter. From frustrated people who just have no place to put it.
So you need to have some place to put your banana peels, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's terrorism.
No, you're right. No, this is the and I hate to use the word dividend, but it's the terrorism dividend for the terrorists. That long after they've scared us, long as after they've done their dastardly deeds, that, you know, in our attempt to prevent it from happening again, we actually become terrorized in a way, aren't we?
In a way, sure.
And so,
because we've had to change our habits permanently.
Right.
Or at least for the indefinite future.
Well, I think, you know, we're going to have to change our habits just for generations.
Even more and even more.
Because, you know, Joan, if you think about these folks, they're not really, they don't have any ideology. I mean, look at the people who were killed in, I mean, if you think about it, there are lots of Muslims in England. So those four men had to know that there would be Muslims on those transporters, on the tubes and on the bus,
right.
which there were.
Right.
And some of them, I'm not sure if any of them were killed, but some of them surely were injured. So, I mean, what are they trying to prove?
Yeah.
It's amazing. Joan, in the end, though, Kiplinger points out that you think we actually will be safer as a result of some of these new things that Mr. Chertoff is doing.
Well, what's the saying that we're hearing, that America will be safer but not safe? I guess that's what people have been saying.
Right.
And that's nothing against Mr. Chertoff. It's just he's got a pretty daunting task ahead of him.
Well, I think we all have to stop and say, if we're we all have a part in this. We're all partners in this national security and the war on terror. And we all have to realize that you know, what are we willing to do to be absolutely safe?
Right.
I'm not even sure it's enough just to stay home. If you decide to do that, who knows? You never can tell. And I think we just have to live our lives.
Well, and if you think about it, if you stayed home and didn't go to work on a given day, that's one less, not that your job is to look for terrorists, but that's one less pair of eyes in the subway system
that
might be something.
Absolutely.
So putting your head in the sand doesn't do any good either.
We're all part of this. There's no question about it.
And I think you've said, if we do stay home, then you do give in to the terrorists.
That's exactly right. And we can't do that. Absolutely. They will have, that's the best way. That's what they want. That's how they want to win.
Right.
And because they've got to win. They can't win really militarily, Joan. They have to win through the mind, don't they?
Right.
They have to make us change the way we behave and
that's right.
And cower down. Joan, real quickly, the IRS is focusing on sub S corporations that have taken the sub S election, which is typically small businesses. What are they up to?
The size?
Yeah.
What's the IRS up to?
Yeah.
And just parenthetically, this is also going to affect partnerships. This is basically affecting what we call pass-through entities. So that would be S-corporations and partnerships.
LLCs as well.
Yes. The IRS is going after them in a big way. They're doing very detailed audits of about 5,000 of them. And when we come back, I can give you more details about those.
When we come back, I want you to tell us what's triggering why these 5,000 have popped up on the IRS's radar screen. I know you won't go away now, folks, especially those of you with LLCs and partnerships and subchapter S's. 2012, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pry, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and their website is kiplinger.com, just like it sounds, kiplinger.com, and it's a great site to go there just to check out what they have for free on their website, but they also have some publications that you need to know about and that I'm very happy to tell you about because they're outstanding. The Kiplinger Letter is now in its 83rd, I think, year.
And you were a charter subscriber, right?
I was. I was way back in 1923. I was one of the first subscribers, absolutely. And I remember Willard well. that's the weekly flagship document and that you can get by email or by snail mail, by hard copy. And then they have three biweekly letters, the tax letter, the California letter, and the agriculture letter. And then there's that magazine, that monthly magazine you can get on the newsstands. Joan, what's it called?
You bet. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. And once a long time ago, it was called Changing Times.
I know it. And check out the phone number. What's that number, Joan?
Oh, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And if you're really nice to them, especially if you're really nice on the keyboard when you're on the website, they'll give you a 30-day free trial.
If you mention Jim's name.
Even if you do, they'll still give you that. That's right.
Right.
Joan, what's the IRS up to now? They're targeting sub-S and pass-through means, folks, a sub-S and an LLC and a partnership are entities. They're legal entities, but they're not tax-paying entities. Whatever revenue, whatever income or losses are there, passed through to the shareholders.
And that, by way of background, that kind of is the beginning of the explanation of what the IRS is upset about, because if they're not passing through a lot of salary to the partners, then there isn't a lot of employment tax being paid. And if you're not making a lot of money, if the sub-S isn't making a lot of money, that's legit. But the IRS is seeing sub-S's and partnerships that are reporting huge amounts of profits, but the partners and the shareowners are taking little or no salary.
Right.
And to them, that's a red flag because that means avoidance of employment taxes.
Right.
And they are going after them in a big way.
Well, and I actually encourage small business owners to minimize their employee tax through rental of the real estate, by owning the real estate personally.
Yes, but that's the thing. You are encouraging it in a legitimate way.
Exactly. No, absolutely. Absolutely. But I will say that sometimes people take that too far, and they pay themselves lease rent payments.
Right.
Their lease is not based on market reality.
There you go.
It's based on what they want. And
right.
that's those, and I bet you in half of those 5,000 audits they'll find, half of the ones that they did contest, I bet a lot of them will have that particular issue where they actually said, you know what, you can't charge $50 a square foot for rent for your building when everybody else is getting $12 a square foot.
Yeah, and see, that's the kind of thing that an audit is going to uncover if it's there to be uncovered.
Absolutely.
But maybe the IRS needs you as a consultant.
Well, there's no question. Well, actually, they call me quite often, and I help them.
No.
I help them with these things. Joan, let's move down and talk a little bit about politics. The Karl Rove issue is still out there. It kind of got pushed to the back because of the Supreme Court nominee, right?
Oh boy, did it ever.
This is the issue where Karl Rove is supposedly a source to one or at least one of the reporters that this is another one of your soapboxes, isn't it, Joan?
Well, a soapbox in the sense having nothing to do with Karl Rove, but somebody, quote-unquote, outed Valerie Plame Wilson, who is a CIA operative who happens to be married to, is he a former State Department official?
Yeah, former. Oh, yeah, absolutely former.
Who had criticized the Bush administration, saying that having to do with the whole weapons of mass destruction controversy.
Yeah.
And
let's don't go that far back. But
okay, but the idea is that I guess he had made the allegation that she was outed, that her identity was
compromised,
made public. Mm-hmm. By people in the White House or in the administration out to get revenge against him. Now, the collateral damage here is that some reporters who were interviewing people and finding out about this were threatened with contempt if they did not reveal their sources, because the special prosecutor is trying to find out, not the special prosecutor, but the prosecutor,
right,
trying to find out who did the leaking. And there is now a New York Times reporter currently in jail,
right,
for not revealing her source.
Right. And that's very unfortunate. But here's where I am on this thing right now, Joan, because this is a pretty complicated
issue. Good, because I'm real confused.
The Democrats have rightly called for the prosecutor to focus on this, to convene a grand jury. They've done that. Why don't we all just take a deep breath, let the prosecutor do his job, and then deal with whatever he finds? See, that's what gets me about this whole issue is we can't just let the guy do his job. We have to do all this political posturing around it, and basically as if we're convening, it's almost like the Democrats are convening their own grand jury on this issue, in the grand jury of public opinion.
Well, and I mean, so, you could have said the same thing about the Bill Clinton impeachment, about many other things.
I don't disagree.
All these issues become politicized.
I agree with you. I've been saying that about both parties. The thing is, we should let the prosecutors, let the professionals do their job, and then whatever is found, then if you want to be political with that, with the results, that's fine. But I think that's what's going to happen now, Joan. I think there are other things out there that are going to take, and apparently, according to polls, Joan, the American public is not interested in this deal.
Yeah, it's really hard for them, I think, to understand what is the big problem here.
Yeah, well, exactly, and I think it's going to all hinge on, Joan, you said she was outed. It's all going to hinge on whether she actually was outed, whether the timeline of her covert activity, I think. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the budget. How's it doing? Is the deficit growing or not? I got good news on that one, folks. Tintail, stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. The small business advocate, Joan Bright, is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, let's move over to page 3 and talk about the federal budget. The deficit, the good news is the deficit is down. They're projecting a significant decrease in the deficit due to significantly increased revenue, in tax revenue, right?
That's the good news.
Yeah. What's the bad news?
Longer term, we're saying that prospects for keeping the deficit from ballooning are pretty bad.
But what it looks like now, Joan, is that we don't have so much a revenue problem. We got a spending problem.
Well, and a lot of it is an entitlement problem, too.
That's right. That's right.
But some of it's an Iraq problem.
Well, that's true. There's a lot of money's going out to Iraq. But, Joan, here's one thing that you guys pointed out this week, that the budget this year is going to be 2.7% of – I mean, sorry, the deficit is going to be 2.7% of gross domestic product, the GDP.
Right.
And I think I read in the
lowest since 2002, which is interesting.
Right, but here's the rest of that story. The Wall Street Journal actually, I think, is estimating maybe a little bit lower than that, like about 2.5. But the thing is, 2.5, Joan, as a percent of GDP, is the average over the last 40 years. The deficit has averaged that over the last 40 years. So my point is, even though at the current rate, even though we may not like what it is, it is not out of the norm for the last 40 years.
Well, yeah, that would be interesting to see like a graph of that, because I would think during the Reagan years, when the deficits were real bad, that
right.
must have spiked up.
I'm not sure, but they may actually have had one of your little handy dandy graph like you guys have.
Really?
In your letter, they may have actually had that in the journal, but it was in this week's journal. It was. I know you read that, so you can go back and find it. So
okay.
that's good news, Joan. On the security issue, back to that just a little bit. The Congress is going to pass an identity theft protection bill this year.
Right.
Now, what's that all about?
And this is important because it involves financial services firms. They'll have a national standard and other businesses also, what you would need to do in the event of a breach of data security. And that's important when you're dealing with customers,
Identity theft is a multi-billion dollar industry, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
It's really sad. And I know a couple of people who've had their identity stolen, and it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
It has been a nightmare for them. And we've actually had some potential breaches that
Ooh.
Our bank determined it may have been a breach. And
That's
I had
great a, that your bank did determine
they
that.
They did
That's
that.
Good.
They sure did. And I had a credit card that I'm going to say I lost it, but I know where I was lost, and I'm not sure it wasn't taken from me
yeah.
at a time when I was not paying attention. But recently, and got that fixed. But talk, you know, one of the things that's going on right now, Joan, in the area of security is biometrics. That
yeah.
that industry is really taking is getting a lot of critical mass, and even though this is primarily for like getting through airports, you could have something similar to this ultimately for just using your credit card, couldn't you?
Oh, no question. That would be, I think, a big help.
Well, that would put a big kibosh on the identity theft
yes,
industry. I would think, wouldn't you?
I would think it would have to. Yeah.
If you walk up and put a fingerprint or a retinal, have your eye scanned in a retina scanner or something like that. But Joan, all of this, you know, if you want to consider identity theft a form of terrorism, all of this requires you and me to give up a little bit of our privacy, a little bit of our liberty to the people who are in control of these things.
That's right.
You know?
That's the downside.
That's right. So the evil that men do are creating this kind of a loss of our own liberties, a little bit of a diminishing of our liberties. And what we have to worry about, Joan, I think sometimes we wind up taking our frustrations out on the people who are trying to protect us.
Oh, I see, yeah.
See what I mean? We have to be careful about that, don't you think?
Right. Get mad at the terrorists.
Exactly. If you're mad, if you don't like going through the long lines at the airports, don't get mad at the TSA guys. Get mad at the terrorists. Joan, quickly, we got about 30 seconds. Congress is going to get more help to the U.S. Patent Office, right?
That's right. Be revising U.S. patent law so you can introduce new products a little bit easier.
They need help there because the people that I know who are inventors and who are getting patents, they say that they don't have enough help at the patent office and it's taking too long to get their documents turned around.
And they've got a law. There's too many lawsuits too. They have to curb the lawsuits.
And they're doing that too, apparently.
Yes.
So that's another good thing. So all you inventors out there, all you folks out there who are working on homeland security projects and innovations and identity security, keep on working. Hopefully the Congress is going to help you with some of your patents. Thank you, Joan, for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next week.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she'll be back. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.